for the students, we're happy to have you here. You are the fourth and final group today. You're part of over 25,000 students that have had an opportunity to see our court in your hometowns since Chief Justice Moyer began this process in 1987. He was very much looking forward to being here today, and unfortunately, his health was failing on him, and he died very unexpectedly on April 2nd. But we know how much he loved these opportunities to come out and have students see our court in action. We all miss him very much, and so you should understand that for us, this is not a normal day. For the lawyers, it's not quite a normal day because they would be used to being in our courtroom in Columbus. And for the lawyers, I will explain again that we are a court of six until May 3rd. All of the matters presented to us in full court or in motions and other matters that are presented will be decided by a court of six. In the event that we do not achieve four votes on any matter, including yours, then the briefs would be submitted to the new Chief Justice. He would review them, review the video, and decide if that's enough information to allow him to comfortably decide. If it is not, this case will be re-argued, but that will be his decision in the unlikely event that we do not achieve four votes from the six of us that are seated before you today. So that's how that will happen. It will spin out in the normal course. So writing and announcement will just take place as it normally does. With that, it does bring us to the final case before us. It's in re the adoption of JAS and JNS. For the appellant's attorney, Joel Fritz.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice Pfeiffer. Your Honors, my condolences to the court. May it please the court and Ms. Cook and the members that are here today in attendance. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes of rebuttal time, if I may.
Watch your time. The light will come on when you have 2 minutes left. So if you see that, you're running out of time soon.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honors, this is a very important day for children, particularly children who are in the legal custody of committed, caring people who seek to provide some stability and permanency for children that are in their care. Today, I urge this court to adopt the reasoned opinion of the Second District Court of Appeals and its holding in In re AWK, as well as reverse the Ninth District Court of Appeals decision in re adoption JAS and JNS, the case at bar. The sole question for the court is, does revised code 5103.16D require pre-adoptive placement where the prospective adoptive parents have been awarded legal custody of the child pursuant to a final dispositional order out of the juvenile court, and the child has been living with the prospective adoptive parents since the award of legal custody? Now, the Ninth District reasoned that strict compliance with this statute was necessary based on this court's decision in Lemley versus Kaiser. They also reasoned that there were some legislative exceptions, and this was not one of them. I submit to this court that RC 5103.16D is not necessary, and its application is not proper under these circumstances. The court in the Ninth District and the lower court set out and looked at the intent of the statute, and the intent, again, through the Lemley decision, was to provide some measure of judicial control, and it's to prevent the surreptitious black market adoptions. And we all know in the Lemley case that there was some surreptitious black market things going on. That is not the case here. The Ninth District felt that we were asking them to carve out or graft another exception, and I submit that we're not asking for this court to graft an exception. We're simply stating that this particular statute is a narrowly defined statute for certain circumstances that which do not apply here. Again, my clients, there is a clear distinction. My clients were granted legal custody of these children through the grant of legal custody in the juvenile court. The statute talks about for purposes of parents or a parent wanting to place their child initially for purposes of adoption. That did not occur in this case. When we talk about...
If we adopt your position, then do we have to say the court has to look at the circumstances, and if it was a court granted a placement, it's one thing. If they did it by agreement through a court, it's another thing. I mean, how do we get to the motivation of the parties placing the child by writing a rule of law that does what you want us to do?
Well, I don't know that we get I think the statute, Your Honor, itself goes to the motivation of a parent in an initial case where they perhaps want to place their child or children. This is an issue of placement for other purposes, getting to the same spot. And if we're looking at why the statute was initial, what the intent of the statute is, and that is to prevent these surreptitious illegal adoptions.
So what prevents, if we accept your proposition, what prevents if someone from a couple going to another couple and saying, you know, we can't take care of this child, we don't have the ability, let's go to court and do a placement with you, and with the idea that you're going to actually end up adopting this child, and then they wait a couple of years and then they apply to the court and say, well, we have legal custody under this new court ruling, we can adopt the child.
Well, I think that there is the measure of judicial control and that the juvenile court has that jurisdiction to look at that. And I don't think that that's the case here either, and I don't think it would be.
But
and
we have to write a rule of
law. I understand that, and I don't
takes
think
care of that.
And I don't think under these circumstances, if we just say that the statute doesn't apply in this case, this was a case where a children's services agency stepped in and took these children from the parent because they were not able to dispense with their duties, responsibilities, and obligations as a parent, and they placed
these. They never terminated the parental rights here.
They did not, Your Honor, and that's clear.
So it's pretty much like a foster placement through protective services.
No,
the juvenile court.
No, it is not. I suppose you could liken it to that, but it's a lesser restrictive placement than foster care. That would be a foster care.
Because there was no oversight during those couple years that these children lived with the potential adoptive parents, correct?
Well, I submit that there was. It just wasn't exercised. The juvenile court maintains jurisdiction over these children till at least they're 18 years of age.
But what I mean is that there were no home studies done over the 2 years. There were no social workers that went out there to see how things were progressing. There was no reports to the court. In essence, it was a guardianship set up, and until or unless there were other problems here, it would just go along, and these people could, you know, enroll the children in school and get medical care under the auspices of guardians, correct?
Well, yes and no. I mean, there is a specific statute and a specific guardianship statute that you go into probate where you can get that. But similarly, they had those rights.
Through the juvenile court order?
Yes, Your Honor, they
okay.
did. And even though you're correct in that there was nobody going out to the home over those years, however, if you look at what happens in 5103.16d, what the requirements are initially when you go to the probate court, ask that they the child be placed, the court has to determine whether the placement is suitable and it's in the best interest. That happened as well in this case because when the adjudicatory phase came about in the juvenile court, the Children's Services Agency had their workers look to certain placements. And firstly, they looked to relatives. That wasn't an issue in this case. They couldn't do that. And then they looked to third parties. And they have to do a study to determine whether that home where they're going to place those children are suitable, and the court has to determine whether or not that's in the best interest. So we're kind of talking about semantics here. It actually happened exactly the way it would happen if a person gave birth to a baby and wanted to place those children.
Except that you have no severance of the parental rights. And in a permanent placement through Child Services for Adoption, you have an actual severance of parental rights. Here, the parental rights are maintained, and you are wanting to use a different method to cut them off without their agreement.
Correct, Your Honor. They do have they have residual parental rights not to place the children for adoption, and I think Adoption Link also prevents that and does not allow them to give them authority to do that. They have a residual right of consent to adoption. However, this is again a procedural statute that should not be a jurisdictional prerequisite to get into those substantive portions of the adoption law, which is the consent phase and the
best
interest phase. But
you maintain under your procedure that the consent's not required.
You still have to prove it. If I prevail here, Your Honor, we're not done. We still have to go and prove. We have to go to court and prove that the consents are not required. And the parents can come and fight that issue and defend that issue. They have that ability.
Could the parents have gone to juvenile court and petitioned to have the children returned to them?
Absolutely, they can, Your Honor. That's part of the residual rights, and that's kind of what I wanted to get into. We talk about the retention of residual rights. I submit to this court that it's the exercise of those residual rights that are important. And in this case, that's why we're here. I submit if they exercise their residual rights, we would not be here.
But here's the situation. The juvenile court took the children and placed them with these non-relatives as a result of circumstances that were present at the time that this occurred. All right, we're into the future now, and the parents with whom these children, the adoptive parents here, now decide they want to adopt these children. And it's one thing for a parent to say at the time that custody is being taken away from them that, okay, maybe I need to get on my feet, maybe I've got some issues here, and it's better for my kids, and I'm not going to contest it, or I'm going to accept what the court does here. It's quite a different thing for them to come be asked several years later to bow out of the picture because now we want to terminate your parental rights. And that's a distinction here. And given this court and the statutes in this state history with preservation of parental rights, you know, I really see this as being problematic to say they shouldn't be able to weigh in on the adoption question at this point.
Your Honor, I agree with you to a certain extent. They have the opportunity, given their residual rights, to exercise those rights. And it only is at the time when they haven't exercised those residual rights. Remember,
What rights would you have them exercise?
Well, they have a right to visitation. They have also duties and responsibilities to pay support.
Was there a support order on through juvenile court?
Yes, there was, Your Honor.
And they failed to do that?
Yes.
And did they visit with these children?
No, Your Honor. That's okay. I submit we would not be here.
Right. So if you go back to the court and you are presenting those facts and you have a hearing on all that, you know, what's the problem with doing that?
For my clients, you mean go and try to terminate their parental rights through the juvenile court? To me, I think that would produce it would be like an unreasonable result. You'd have to go back to the court and terminate their parental rights. And the only way to do that is to now give back those children to the Children's Services Agency for them to have permanent custody, because you can't have legal custody and have a parent with no rights, because by virtue of its definition, parents retain their residual rights.
You have to have a state agency or a county agency that's going to be
certainly
part of this, unless there's a voluntary relinquishment of those rights, and then you have a private placement adoption, and that's probate court. And
correct.
I understand that.
Correct.
But here you want to say you may have agreed to the guardianship or the placement, let's put it that way, through juvenile court, and the circumstances of your life at that time dictated that you do that. Here we fast forward several years, and because of your original agreement to the placement, we're almost going to hold that against you.
Well, now, I don't agree with that, Your Honor. I don't agree with that characterization. First of all, when these parents are presented with the fact pattern and that they are going to have their children taken away, and if they look at the evidence, it's kind of whether or not it was a hearing or they agreed to it because of the overwhelming evidence, and be kind of liken it to pleading guilty in a case, in a criminal case, that they lost a certain amount of their rights. Now, we have to remember that these parents had the opportunity to file a case plan. This wasn't supposed to be permanent, although legal custody does say that whoever accepts this will agree to keep these children for that length of period until they reach 18 or graduate from high school. But there is the absolute right to reunify with the children within a certain time frame. And when that doesn't happen and the court has exhausted or the Children Services Agency has exhausted all of its remedies to try to reunite this child or children with the family, it is only then when they grant this legal custody because they can't. You know, they've ran out of time, basically. And so they elect to do legal custody. And that's what happened in this case. So we have parents here who, again, I liken it to, it's not necessarily the retention of these residual rights, but it's the exercise which they failed to do. And when that comes up, parents or people that are legal custodians have that opportunity then to get into the substantive portions of adoption, and that is the consent and the best interest hearing. But again, I think all of the things that happen in the narrowly defined portion of this statute with regard to going and having these parents place these children with other people happened in the legal custody part of it when there was a study done. They found out that these people were suitable and it was in their best interest. And again, I think it's another problem in this case that the court in Adoption Link has now said that, you know, these parents don't have the authority to even do what the statute says you can do. And again, I think it's a narrowly tailored statute for purposes when a parent wants to place their child with another party and to do it legally and not illegally. And we don't have that here.
Mr. Fritz, yes, ma'am. You've been talking very specifically about your case. And
yes.
As you know, we look at these cases on a very wide perspective because whatever rule comes out of this court applies to other situations.
Correct, Your Honor.
How would you phrase your rule of law that you would wish us to adopt?
I would phrase my rule of law that legal custodians, people who are legal custodians, it is not necessary for pre-adoptive placement, and it does not apply and the statute does not apply to legal custodians.
And you don't see that as an exception to the statute?
I suppose it could be, but I don't see it as an exception because I believe the facts in this case are definitely different than what's been presented in the way and the intent of the statute.
But there is no statutorily created exception such that you're suggesting.
Correct, Your Honor.
And we've already said we're going to construe this statute strictly.
Yes, Your Honor, you have. However, you've also said that we're going to construe them strictly, but not to such an extent that it would produce an unreasonable result. And there's also, this court has found, I think in the line of cases, Biddle, Tilton, and Howell, where placements other than for purposes of adoption have resulted in adoptions.
But isn't that...
The difficulty is, as Justice Lansinger points out, might work for you, but we don't know the effect that may have around the state if we do this because there's so many courts that would be looking at this and so many situations. Isn't this better left for the policymakers in the legislative branch of government?
No, Your Honor. I believe that for people who are legal custodians, I think it will apply universally throughout the state based on these circumstances and that the statute won't apply. I also would urge the court to read and consider the amicus briefs that talk about the constitutionality, the equal protection arguments.
Counsel, there's a distinction in the law between placements that are made with relatives and non-relatives.
Yes.
Okay, and the placement that's made with relatives, you're actually asking us to treat the non-relative placement to be exactly the same as relative placement?
Not necessarily, Your Honor, and the reason why I say that is I believe it was the Wilson decision where they discussed the issue between, those were grandparents, and they discussed the issue whether it was a relative versus a non-relative, but the case didn't turn on whether those parties were relatives.
The statute talks in terms of relative and non-relative.
I understand.
And that's what we're looking at for, you're asking us to create some kind of exception here, when the statute has already made a distinction between relative and non-relative placement, and what you have here is a non-relative placement that statutorily does not receive the same treatment for the purposes of adoption as a relative.
Yes, but again, I am not asking this court to create an exception or graft an exception. I'm merely stating that I believe that this statute does not apply under these circumstances to legal custodians.
Thank you, Mr. Fritz. Our questions have taken you way over, so you might assume you may not get a second bite at the apple.
Thank you.
Elizabeth Cook, representing the appellees, and Ms. Cook, if you want to introduce your... And explain who they are, your co-counsel.
Yes, please, Justice Pfeiffer. My name is Elizabeth Cook. I'm from the Moritz College of Law Civil Clinic, meaning I teach at OSU's law school, and I have with me two of my legal interns. I've got Stephen White and Jonathan Franz with me, and they've helped a lot on this case as well, and we're all thrilled to be here. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you. Proceed.
May it please the court. Revised Code Section 5103.16 was enacted to prevent surreptitious adoptions. And without the due process requirements and the protections of the due process clause that are in the pre-adoptive placement statute, this would be a surreptitious adoption.
Well, counsel, should we take a look at the fact that this placement has the blessing of juvenile court and take that as clearly taking it out of the purview of a surreptitious adoption, a black market adoption. This has the approval already of one court.
Well, Your Honor, it has the approval as to the legal custody being awarded to the appellants. It does not have the approval of the termination of parental rights, which we submit as a very, very different thing. Surreptitious is defined by the American Heritage Dictionary as being acquired by secret, clandestine, or stealthy means. And we believe that if parental rights are able to be terminated through the process of 3107.07A, that will be a surreptitious adoption because the biological parents will not have noticed that the nature of the placement has changed and that these children are now up for adoption.
But you would agree that if they entered into the court system and petitioned the court for adoption, it would have to be going, in this circumstances, probably through a children's services agency in some capacity.
I believe they have two separate roads they could travel in order to adopt in this situation if they were able to prove that the parents had failed to exercise their visitation and other
support.
Rights.
Got other support. Well, visit and support, and this is standard
right.
There for it.
Yeah. And those, if they had been able to, if they're able to show that they couldn't, I think there are two different roads they could go down. They could go back to the juvenile, the prospective adoptive parents could go back to the juvenile court. They could ask the GAL or the Children's Service Agency to terminate parental rights. They could approach the juvenile court and ask for an alternative disposition, a placement for adoption, which they haven't done. Or they could go to the probate court and seek to be made permanent guardians, and then they would be outside the purview of the statute. The big difference in going to the probate court and becoming a guardian is the notice requirement. And we think that's the key to this, which is due process is required before these children are forever foreclosed from having an opportunity to know their biological parents.
These parties have contested that if we make them go through the adoptive process as it stands where is it, as you claim the law stands, that they would have to give the children back to Children's Services and then reapply to get the children. Cannot this all be done on paper if the Children's Services gets involved and they do have to go through a placement and termination of parental rights? Or is there a danger that, yes, in fact, Children's Services will take these children back during the interim period and place them somewhere else and all the parade of horribles that they mention?
Your Honor, we do not think that is a reality. We think that the children may remain with the prospective adoptive parents until this is sorted out on paper. And that the big issue is that there would be a hearing and the parents would be notified before the hearing that their parental rights were on the line here, that they could be foreclosed forever, and they would have that notice, which they don't have in the 3107.07a situation. Your Honors, today as appellee, we respectfully request that you uphold the Ninth District Court of Appeals decision and that you hold that pre-adoptive placement is required by Revised Code 5103.16d when the prospective adoptive parents have obtained legal custody of the children through the juvenile court system. We believe that this is essential for three key reasons. First, it is required by due process. Second, it is required by the statutes. And third, it is good public policy. If this court upholds the pre-adoptive placement requirements, it will actually strengthen the institution of adoption by assuring that the adoptions that go forward are appropriate and less likely to disrupt. Turning first to due process. Due process means a notice and an opportunity to be heard. Ms. Walker was a mother with an established relationship with her children when she went to the neglect and dependency hearing. At that hearing, while legal custody was awarded to the appellants in this case, she was informed that she had residual parental rights, the rights to visit her children, and the right to consent to the adoption of her children. She was not told at that hearing that she could lose those rights if she failed to contact or support her children while she got herself clean and sober, which is something the court also told her to do. Now, if her rights can be foreclosed without notice that her children have ever been placed for adoption and with no counsel to help her understand how to protect those rights, her rights will be violated and both mother and children will lose the opportunity to have a relationship
counsel,
going forward.
Counsel, was there a court order when the placement was established that talked about support?
There was, Your Honor.
And she was obligated to support these children?
She was, and it's my understanding that she is now, Your Honor, but that was, she didn't get her job until after.
Can we?
All right, so she was under a court order for support.
She was under a court order for support. She didn't get out of her inpatient treatment program until about 6 months before this petition for adoption was filed. And
how long have these children been residing with the custodians?
They began residing with them, I believe, in, the juvenile court, temporary custody was awarded by the juvenile court in January of 2006. Although I believe the children had been with this family a little bit before that. Then in October of 2006 was the award for legal custody.
And they then after, here we are, 4 years later, and these children have been continuously with the adoptive parents.
That is correct, Your Honor.
And then you say about 6 months ago, the mother was released from rehab?
Oh, no, I'm sorry, Your Honor. About 6 months before the petition for adoption, which was filed, and that was filed in October of 2008.
Right, and so for the 2 years between 2006 and 2008, she wasn't visiting or supporting these children?
I believe that's correct, Your Honor. I don't know whether there was some contact or not, but again, there's nothing in the record to tell us that for sure, so I'm just want to be clear that I'm not on record facts at this moment, Your Honor. But Your Honor, the part of
you would agree though that if these parents would proceed through the potential adoptive parents through Children's Services,
that they would have to go to court, and very likely with the failure to support and failure to visit the children, it may vary. That's the criteria for terminating parental rights.
Yes, Your Honor, but there's a time frame difference, which is when someone files a petition for adoption, they have the opportunity to suggest that consent is unnecessary because there's been a failure to support or contact within the year before they filed that. If there were a termination of parental rights hearing, I believe they would look at the current facts as well at that point in time. But part of the problem with why due process is not satisfied by a right to consent that can be dispensed with under 3107.07a is that the persons to whom who have the opportunity to demonstrate that consent is unnecessary are also the persons who control access to the children. And this is really a fox guarding the hen house problem.
But that's not what we have here, where there's an allegation that the clients have failed to allow, and that's not really part of our argument here.
No, it's part of the reason why 3107.07a does not give sufficient due process, and why there has to be the notice provisions of a pre-adoptive placement, or you have to go back either through the probate court or you have to go back through the juvenile court to terminate these rights. There's a huge problem with notice, where when the last thing the court tells the biological parents is you have these rights, and then they consent at that time to the legal custody placement, then down the road, if these children can be adopted out from under them, well, they still thought they had a chance to get their life together, to get it back in touch with their children. That's not enough notice. And we do not, as a public policy matter, want to give biological parents a disincentive to consenting to the award of legal custody to willing third parties. We don't want to push the battleground to whether you are going to have a relationship forever and ever with your children to that stage where children are in need of being placed in a stable home environment. Additionally, on the public policy matter.
Well, the flip side to that argument is had she not agreed to a custody, you would have had Children's Services in there, and you would have had Children's Services taking those children under their authority, because she was clearly, as you say, needed to be clean and sober and get a job and get her life together. So she was in no shape. The alternative was that the county services step in, and then we wouldn't be talking here if that was the situation.
Well, there's a difference in what they could have stepped in to do, Your Honor. If they stepped in and took temporary custody, then she would still have those residual rights, and on down the road, if she would have the right to visit, she would have the right to consent to adoption. If they went the step and decided that this was a situation where they needed to terminate parental rights, then there are due process protections built into that statute. Our concern here is that we're essentially circumventing the due process protections in the PCC statutes, the 2151 series, that protect the rights and give the sufficient notice to the biological parents. And that's our concern, and that's why we feel the statute applies. Legal custody was designed to be permanent. Before someone is granted legal custody, they have to sign a statement stating that they understand the intent is for it to be permanent, and they understand and are willing to be the custodians for that individual until that individual reaches the age of majority.
And counsel, if we accept your position, then the biological parent would have the right to veto. Is that correct?
Well, Your Honor, we don't think it's an absolute right to veto. We think that it would stop it at this stage through this process, and it would send it back through the statutorily approved process, yes. So it's not a veto forever and ever, you can't adopt. But if the biological parents are actually exercising their residual parental rights, then we submit it shouldn't be stopped, that it should be stopped. But it needs to go back. If they're going to determine that they can't have that relationship going forward, they need to go back and give the due process protection that the legislature envisioned and enacted.
Counsel, would another way to do this,
mm-hmm.
in terms of we're all focused and should be focused on the best interests of the mm-hmm. children and the important constitutional rights of the natural parents, right. If the legislature were to modify the provisions in the juvenile court law
mm-hmm.
that said, if your child gets, you know, in the situation that we have before it, you are on notice that a path leading to permanent placement of your children is an alternative this court has down the road, and it will depend on your behavior with respect to your children. Would that satisfy the argument that you think the Constitution requires you make on behalf of your client?
Your Honor, if going forward the biological parents are afforded counsel and the counsel is instructed to give them counseling on how to actually exercise their rights, and if the notice that they're put on before those hearings is altered to meet requirements of satisfactory notice, then I think you could be right, Your Honor. But as it currently stands, the situation in which the notice they receive is that your rights could be permanently foreclosed. In fact, the notice they get with their guardianship
is... So the practical question becomes, how soon do you put the parents on the clock?
And how soon do you want the clock to run? I mean, these are very, very difficult questions, but we submit that at this point in time, what we have, what the legislature has grappled with and come up with, and therefore we need to apply it here. I don't think there's anyone who works in this area who would suggest that there couldn't be improvements. But we have what we have now. And really, I believe what Mr. Fitz is asking for is really an exception. He's really asking for the court to add somebody else to subsection E.
And counsel, at this point, I got the impression that there was a best interest of the children overlay here. We don't even get to the best interest of the children if the parental rights cannot be terminated. The best interest of the children is served by having them in this custodial arrangement so they're safe and fed and cleaned and taken care of. But unless there's grounds for termination of parental rights, we're not talking about, you can't terminate parental rights simply because it's in the best interest of the children.
The analysis.
It's
definitely part of the
analysis.
In and
of itself,
right.
Are we going to look at the best interest of the children as being, or there'd be a lot of people walking around with their parental rights severed, but that's not the sole criteria here.
I would agree with you, Your Honor. That's not the sole criteria. Your Honor, as I see my time is up, may I briefly
take a little time to wrap up?
Okay. Right.
A little time, yeah.
Okay. Well, basically, the pre-adoptive placement requirements of 5103.16d are necessary to protect the due process rights of the biological parents. 3107.07 protections are not enough because these rights can be lost without notice that the nature of the placement has changed. Termination of parental rights requires strict adherence to due process standards, and adoption terminates parental rights. We can't go around those due process requirements by simply skipping this statutory step. In the absence of a pre-adoptive placement requirement, if Ms. Walker were found to have failed to contact or support her children between October of 07 and October of 08, her consent will be deemed unnecessary. And therefore, without that notice, we believe these children will be surreptitiously adopted. For that reason, we respectfully request that this court affirm the decision of the Ninth District Court of Appeals and uphold the pre-adoptive placement provisions of 5103.16. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Cook. Mr. Fritz, we're going to deem this matter submitted. You, I think, have pretty well outlined. I don't think we're in any doubt what your position is, nor Ms. Cook's. And to the students, nice work on working on the briefs. Congratulations. Someone else gets to determine your grade, but good work. Yeah. Anyway, and to all of you students, I believe... they get to quiz you folks, so I'm sure you'll have plenty of questions because this is a case, unlike a couple of the others that we had, that are we had a case in here where lawyers are battling over their fees. That's probably not of great interest to high school students. this one would be. So have to the students, have fun with the lawyers. At this point, you're dismissed, and I believe the court is supposed to be back for a photo with, I'm not sure. 12:45 is that? All right. So we're going to adjourn at this point. Thank you.